very, very beginning of Chumash book. So let's start quickly. Chumash Bereshit
is called the Book of Creation. Oh, I hate being recorded. Okay. Chumash Bereshit is called the Book of Creation, right? The creation of the world, the very, very beginning of the Jewish people, the forefathers, the 12 tribes. And then we move on to Chumash Shmot, which is called the Book of Exile and Redemption, right? And that's really the Jewish nation becoming a nation, right? Multiplying, becoming into a nation, the receiving of the Torah, which was one of the main stages in becoming nation, and then at the very end, entering Israel, which was the second stage in the final redemption. The third stage in the final redemption, by the way, is when we return to this level of our forefathers. So there's three levels of redemption. There's the Torah, which we'll never receive again. We received it once and that was enough. Number two is Israel. And number three is returning to the level of our forefathers. Okay, so that's why Shemot is called a book of exile and redemption, because they have these three stages in Chumash Shemot. So at the very beginning of Chumash Shemot, we find the Chumash Shemot begins with counting again the 70 people who came down to Egypt, and then quickly reminding us who Yosef was, who Joseph was, what he did for the Jewish people, what he did for the Egyptians and for the Jewish people. And then the pasuk says, "Vayakam melech chadash b'mitzrayim asher lo yada et Yosef," a new king that did not know Yosef. Now all the mefarshim say right away, it can't be that he really did not know Yosef. It's as if we would say we don't know who Herzl is. What do you mean we don't know who Herzl is? Of course, he's not here with us today, but of course we remember him. You know, in history classes in Egypt, they learned about Joseph. How could it be that he didn't know about Joseph, right? MSB, he made himself as if he doesn't know. Why? He had a whole plan, annihilate the Jewish people. He did it very smart. He says, have any tchakmalo? We have to trick them. We have to do it in a smart way. We can't just, like, go and, you know, again, imagine we came and we said, you know, forget about the Zionist movement, right? Let's just erase it from our history books, erase it from our texts, erase it from our consciousness, right? That wouldn't work. Pyro needed to do it smart. So one of the first stages that he does, he calls the Jewish midwives, okay? So this is the first quote. So Melech Mitzrayim, the king of Egypt, says to the Jewish midwives, "Asher shema achat Shifra, v'shema sheni Pua." Their names were Shifra and Pua. Vayomer, v'yaldotchen et ha'ivriot, u'iten al ha'ovnayim. When you come and help the Jewish women in labor, u'iten al ha'ovnayim. Al ha'ovnayim was the sort of like a birth chair, what they call it today. It was a type of rock that they sat on. Im benhu v'hamiten oto. If it's a boy, you kill it. Ve'im bati v'chaya. If it's a girl, you let it live. V'tirena ha'meyaldot et ha'elokim. The midwives feared God instead of Paro. Ve'lo asu kasher diber alehem melech mitzrayim v'techayena et ha'yeladim. V'yikra, so instead of killing the babies, they kept them alive. V'yikra melech mitzrayim l'meyaldot. So melech mitzrayim called, the king of Egypt called the midwives, and he says to him, "Madu asiten et hadavar hazeh? Why did you do this thing? But techayena et hayeladim, and you kept the babies alive." Vatomerna hameyaldot el paro. So they answer back, "Ki lo kanashim hamitzriot hayviot. The Jewish women are not like the Egyptian women. Ki chayot hena. There's something about the way they live. They just give birth very quickly. They don't really need us. By the time we come, the babies are born already." Before the midwife even gets there, the baby's born already. And we didn't want to make it obvious that we were killing the babies, of course. So therefore, we just let it go. Okay, so if you think about these psukim, these verses, it's very weird. First of all, what is Paro telling them? If we remember saying beforehand, we didn't go into it in detail, but we said that Paro did it in a very smart way. He wanted to trick the Jewish people, right? He couldn't just go straight out and say, okay, all the Jewish boys need to be killed. That wouldn't go, right? He did it in a smart way. So what is it? How do we see the smart way in the psukim? Over here, it just says straight out that Paro said kill the baby boys, right? But we know that can be. So we have to figure out, what did Paro exactly tell them, okay? Number two is, if you see in the verses, it doesn't say, the whole time it goes in a positive way of speaking. Instead of saying that they did not do what Paro said, it said that they did do what Hashem would want them to do. Right? They took pictures already, it's fine. Yeah. okay, so if you see, Vatirena Miadot et Elokim, But it's like very repetitive. They didn't do what the king of Egypt told them, and they made the kids alive. What do you mean they made the kids alive? They didn't kill them. What's v'techayena et hayeladim? The kids were alive, right? They just did not kill them. And then afterwards it says again, v'yikam melech mitzrayim l'meyaldot. So he called them again and he said, madu asitan et hayeladim? Why did you do this thing? They didn't do anything. He told them, kill the babies. They did not kill the babies. So why does it say, madua asiten et hadavar? What did you do? Vatechayena et hayeladim. Again, you did not make them alive. You just did not kill them, right? So that's just something interesting. So if you look in the Gemara, the next quote, it says, siman masar lahim. Paro gave them a siman. What's a siman? Like a sign, right? A hint. Bat paneha lemala, ben panav lemata. Okay, ben... When a baby comes out, and I don't know, I haven't been enough flavors to know if it's true, but I'm sure it is true for, you know, for a split of a moment. A baby, as it's being born, his face faces down, and a girl, her face faces up. So we said, Melech Mitzrayim does it in a very smart way. What does he do? What, you don't believe it? No?
It would be...
Okay, so I'll tell you what I thought about it a lot also. I was just reading a psychology article about facial expressions that last a split of a moment. It's called, it has a name, I forget what it's called. Again?
Micro.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So these micro expressions, I wouldn't be able to notice it, but someone who's trained to see these micro expressions would be able to. I think it's similar to that. If you're just a midwife standing over there, you wouldn't be able to notice it. But this is something spiritual. It's something about the way God created men and women, boys and girls. Something about them, when they're about to be born, their spirituality is expressed in a way that a boy looks down and a girl looks up. Okay?
Okay. So, not physical.
It's something spiritual that is expressed for a very short time. It's expressed in a physical way. So this is amazing because, first of all, we see the Gemara is explaining to us how Paro did it in a smart way, right? So he told them, first of all, it says, when you see that it's a boy, kill it. If you see that it's a girl, keep it alive. When do you know if it's a boy or a girl? When the whole body comes out, right? We all know the head comes out first. So by the time the whole body comes out, the woman knows already that the baby's alive. So then it would be obvious that the midwife killed the baby. And again, Paro needs to keep it secret, right? So what does he do? He tells them, I'm going to give you a hint. Okay, as soon as the head starts peeking out, check. If it's looking up, it's a girl. If it's looking down, it's a boy. And then the Gemara goes on. He told them to choke the babies, and then the women think that the baby was stillborn, and they think it was natural, and that was basic. You know, that was his plan. Okay. So, then the question.
Is this spiritual looking down and looking up? Is that one of the reasons that women are said to be on a higher spiritual plane?
So we're going
to
get there. Yeah,
oh, okay.
We're getting there. Yeah. Okay. We're getting there. Right? So the Gemara and other Mefarshim go on, and they want to understand, what does it mean? What's the meaning behind a woman looking up and a male looking down? Right? And that's exactly what they say. They say, and we're going to go into that. This is just like the first part, but the... Women are born with this ability to look. If you go in the street, people who look down, what do they usually look like? They're sad, they're depressed, you know, they're just like walking along. And people who look up, right? People who look up are they're carrying life with them. They're excited. They're, you know. So the Gemara explains that women are born with this natural positivity, with this natural thrill for life that they carry with them from the moment that they're born. And that is expressed in the Gemara saying that women are born with their face already looking up. They're already looking forward to launch their life, their journey in this world. And men, they manage eventually, you know. But at the beginning, you know, at the very beginning, there's that, oh, don't tell my husband I said that. But at the very beginning, there's that, you know, it's harder for them, and we'll see afterwards why. But women, and it's true, it connects to that, the women are more spiritual. They're more spiritual, they're connected upwards, they're connected to God more, and again, we'll see more as we go along. Yeah.
So who gave the midwife the sign?
Paro.
So doesn't it seem odd that he would tell them something
that's spiritual? So first of all, not really, because Paro was spiritual. He made himself a god. He knew a lot about godliness and stuff like that. And second of all, the fact that he gave them the sign doesn't mean that he actually knew all the meaning behind it. But the fact he gave them the sign, and then the Gemara wants to explain what's the meaning behind this sign that he gave them. Okay, it doesn't mean that he actually knew the intricacies of the sign. It means that he gave them the physical sign, and then the Gemara goes on to explain the meaning of the sign. Okay? Okay, so let's go on, and we'll get back and we'll tie all these things together, okay? So in Shemot Bet, right after this, it says, Vayalech ish mi beit Levi vayikachet bat Levi. So a man from the tribe of Levi goes, and he marries a woman from the tribe of Levi. So, again, Rashi and other Mefarshim want to explain what happened. What was this that they married? And the Midrash says, and they're being from the Gemara, lots of other places, that basically because of this, eventually it got out. You know, it didn't stay a secret for too long. Eventually it got out that there was a gezeira on the boys, right? The Jewish children, and the Jews felt very strongly that Paro was out to get them, right? So many, many Jewish couples separated because they said, what's the point? What's the point in having children? It wasn't only that they separated because of that. It was also that Paro separated the men from the women. On purpose, he sent the men out and gave them, work very far away that separated them from their wives. We'll go, again, there's more sources after that talk about that. But the Jewish families felt that there was no reason to continue living together, having children. The continuity of the Jewish people was anyways already was questionable already. There's no reason to continue, okay? So so Amram, who's the son, the grandson of Levi, the son of Jacob, right? So he's a great-grandson of Jacob himself. Amram had a daughter, Miriam. He had a son, Aaron, and Miriam. And then after the Gezerah, after this decree came out, they separated, right? And his daughter, Miriam, comes to him, and she says to him, Ta, you know, you're worse than Paro. Because Paro made the decree only on the boys, only on the males. But with you separating from mom, the decree is on the boys and the girls, the whole continuity of the Jewish people. So you're even worse than Paro. And by you doing this, you're saying that you don't believe that God is going to redeem the Jewish people eventually. And Amram listened to his daughter Miriam, and he remarried his wife. And being that Amram was sort of the main rabbi, the leader of the Jewish people at the time, being that he was a great-grandson of Jacob, and a great Torah scholar. So many of the people did the same and reunited with their wives, and it was a very great moment for the Jewish people, basically. Okay?
Wait, hold on. I need you to, slow down for a minute.
Sure.
Okay, so we were on Rashi, and you were talking about a decree, right?
Right.
Where's the story of the
okay, so here. So now I'm going to read it inside. Okay, so Rashi right. On that pasuk says, Parush hayami mena. He was separated from her, mipnei gzeras paro, because of the decree of paro. V'chazar ulekacha, he went and he remarried her. Shehalach ba'atzat bito, why did he do that? He went after the advice of his daughter. Sheamra lo, she told him, gzeratcha kasha mishel paro, your decree is harder than the decree of paro. Im paro gazar al atcharim, paro only decreed this, had this decree on the males. But ata gam ken al hanekevot, you, by you separating from your wife, you are putting the decree on the women too, on the whole continuity of the Jewish people. Okay? So this is one example of something that went on at the time. And
I need more background. So who is putting the decree on the couples not being together?
So that was just their own reaction to what was going on.
Okay.
Again, if I brought the Chumash with me, we'd be able to really read through and see what happened. But the decrees got harder and harder. By now, the Jews were enslaved. They were working really hard. Paro separated them, not literally. I mean, he didn't tell them, you can't be married, you can't have relations, you can't have children, but he made sure to give the males work that was in the fields, very far away, and it basically disabled any family life, basically. So then the husbands just sort of despaired, and they said, well, what's the point in continuing? What's the point in having children? What's the point in having relationships? What's going to be the end? What's going to be with us, right? So, but then we see over here a woman who goes and she tells her father, you can't despair so quickly, right? Paro is only a human being, and by you despairing, you're becoming worse than Paro, right? By you doing this, you're really disabling the whole continuity of the Jewish people. Paro can try his very best, but who is it really up to at the very end? It's up to God, it's not up to you. And he listened to her, which shows something very great about Amram. And he listened to his daughter. Okay, so now let's read more about the women in Joseph. So now we saw an example about Miriam, who's one woman, and we'll see more examples about her greatness later. But now let's see examples about all women, because at the end of it, we could always say, well, Miriam was a single woman, right? But what about all of us? How can we connect to all these great women? So actually, there were many women who did great things at the time. So let's see. This is a quote from the Gemara in Sota. Okay, the Gemara in Sota says, "Bischar nashim tzidkaniyot, in the merit of the great women shehayu beoto hador that lived in that generation, nigalu Yisrael miMitzrayim. The Jewish people were redeemed from Mitzrayim." Now that's a very strong quote. I mean, basically the Gemara says that why were the Jews taken out of Egypt? Only because of the women. If not for the women, the men would despair, and that would be the end of the Jewish people. But the women, how? We'll see. But for the merit of the righteous women in that generation, the Jews were able to be redeemed from Egypt. Okay? How? What happened? B'sha'ah she'ochot lish'ov mayim, they went to draw water out of the well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu mezamen lahen, God brought to the well dagim ktanim, small fish. And when they drew out the water, haya shavot mechetza mayim umechetza dagim. It ended up that in their bucket, it ended up that instead of having just water, they had half water and half fish. Uvaot, and they came home b'shuftot shtei kderot. They put up two pots, achat shel chamin ve'achat shel dagim, one with hot water and one with fish. After they were done, they took those two pots and walked and traveled to visit their husbands in the field. They bathed with the hot water, and they brought oils and creams. They gave them to eat and to drink. Right? So the Gemara goes on to explain that the women renewed that relationship, right? The men despaired. The men said, we're out in the field. Come on, we're exhausted at the end of the day from all this back-breaking work. We're done, really. There's no hope. And the women didn't despair. They said, no, it's true, right? It's bad. It definitely looks bad. But there's still hope. And they went out of their way. They went and they got the water and the food. And they went out and they convinced their husbands to continue and not to despair, not to give up. They were able to see beyond the hardships of the moment. So this was so, and the Gemara goes on to the degree to say that in the reward of these righteous women, Bnei Yisrael were redeemed from Mitzrayim. You shouldn't think this was something so small, right? The Gemara itself recognizes these acts of righteousness, these acts of perseverance, of positivity, of, you know, these feelings of not giving up. This is what brought the redemption to the Jewish people. Nothing else. It was basically the women, right? So, yeah.
So the acts of putting up the water and the fish, so they're nourishing the family by definition, physically and spiritually.
And emotionally, because okay. We'll go on, we'll see, there's another quote that speaks about the same, okay? So, much, much later on, in Shemot Lamed Chet, that's the very end of Chumash Shemot, we're talking now about erecting the Mishkan, right? The tabernacle?
Yeah,
thank you. And we're talking about the Kiyor, okay? So, all the Jewish people donated from their jewelry and from their stuff to build the Mishkan, and the women were very, very generous with their donations. So much so that they brought something that's called Mar'ot Tzov'ot. Mar'ot is a mirror, and Tzov'ot is, I don't know what the word comes from. And all the Mefarshim stop over there and they say, what are these Mar'ot Tzov'ot that the women donated? Okay? So Rashi says over there, he brings it from the Medrash and from the Gemara. Benot Yisrael, the daughters of Israel, hayu biyadan marot, they had mirrors. Kesheraot bahen, keshehen mitkashtot. They used to look in the mirror when they got pretty, when they beautified themselves. It wasn't mirrors that we know today, it was basically polished brass, because the kiyar was made out of brass, it was polished brass. The af otan, even these mirrors, lo ikvu mi lehavi l'nedavat ha-mishkan. They were so generous that not only their jewelry, not only their necklaces and their earrings and all that stuff, they even brought their own personal mirrors. V'haya mo'ez bahen Moshe mipnei she'asuyim la'yetzer hara. Moshe did not really like this idea of bringing the mirrors, because he said, what do women use the mirrors for? They use it to beautify themselves and tempt, hopefully, their husbands, right? So at the end of the day, it's made for the Yetzer Hara. It's made to tempt their husbands, right? So Hashem says to Moshe, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kabel, do not reject those mirrors. You have to accept them. Ki elu chavivim alai min hakol. These mirrors is the most beloved donation. All the donations that came for the Mishkan, from all the men, all the women, all the Jewish people, this is the most beloved donation I have accepted so far. She'al yedehen he'emidu hanashim, through these mirrors, the women, he'emidu, they brought about, tzva'ot rabot ha-mitzrayim, tzva, what's tzva? In modern Hebrew, tzva is an army, in biblical Hebrew also, but tzva also means a gathering of many, many people, right? So through these mirrors, the women brought about millions of people, millions of Jewish people, the Mitzrayim. Kishehayu be'alehen yege'im be'avodat parech, when their husbands were exhausted from the back-breaking work, hayu holchot umolichot lahen, they used to go out to the fields and bring them ma'achal u'mishteh, food and drink, u'ma'achilot otam, ונוטלות המראות, and they used to take these mirrors, וכל אחת הייתה רואה את עצמה עם בעלה, used to take these mirrors and put them in front of them, and each one of them used to see herself with her husband. ומשדלתה בדברים, not only did they do these physical actions like you said, but ומשדלתה בדברים, meaning they spoke to them, they comforted them, they didn't only feed them physically, they fought them, they fed them emotionally, right? They encouraged them, and they spoke them words of strength, and words of hope, and words of courage, and encouragement. ומתוך כך מביאות בעליהן לידי תאווה, and through that, their husbands, you know, got renewed energy, and they fell the love to their wives again, ונזקקות להן, ומתעברות. And God made a miracle that all the women became pregnant, you know, the women became pregnant very quickly. I guess there were no fertility clinics in Egypt. Umitabrot v'yoldot sham, right? So again, we see over here, it was amazing, right? In the Gemara it says, Bitchan Hashim Tzidkaniyot, right? It's in the reward of these women that the Jews were redeemed from Mitzrayim. You say, okay, so in the Gemara, in that one place it says that. But no, we find it again. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, these mirrors that the women give, That's the most beloved donation I've ever received. And why? Doesn't cover up the story. That is the story. This is what the women did. And through this, the redemption came about. You look at unease, no? Okay. Okay. So, we move on. We say, okay, so that's what happened in Egypt. What about the future? What about the future? You know, in Egypt, the women were very special, right? They had this unique ability to look up, right? To look up, to look beyond, to feed the nation physically and emotionally. And in their reward, in their merit, they came out of Egypt. Actually, the Midrash says, "Ein hadorot nigalim." Not only that generation in Egypt, but future generations too. Ein hadorot nigalim, all future generations are going to be redeemed. Ela besachar nashim tzidkaniyot sheyesh bador, and the reward of righteous women that are in every generation. In every generation, sheneemar, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, "Zachar chasdo v'emunato levet Yisrael." Hashem remembers His kindness and His promise to the Jewish people. Emunah is to be trustworthy, to believe in someone. So Hashem remembers, Hashem is trustworthy to remember His kindness to the Jewish people. Libnei Israel, Enktiv Bnei Israel is always a general word speaking about the whole Jewish people, but Beit Yisrael always talks about the women. Okay, in many places that comes up, Beit Yisrael is the women. Like we find Kotomar leBeit Yaakov, v'taged leBnei Yisrael. So Beit Yaakov are the women, and Bnei Yisrael are the men. So Bnei Yisrael is a general term used for all Jewish people. Beit, the bayit, is always referring to the women. Okay, leBnei Yisrael ain't ktiv kan, ela leBeit Yisrael. Okay, so the Medrash says, you should know, it did happen only in Mitzrayim. The beginning was in Mitzrayim. But women, the Jewish women, have this ability to bring about redemption in future generations too. Now, I want to tell you an amazing thing. Think about all exiles that we've had so far, right, that we know about, that we've been redeemed. What was it? So it was Mitzrayim is the first one, right? And what was after that?
Bavel,
Persia. So things that we celebrate, things that we know about specifically. Esther and? In Hanukkah?
Greek.
Right, Yavan. But how did anyone know how the Geula started, how it came about? There's a woman, her name was Yehudit. You heard of Yehudit? Right. So actually the Gemara says that in these three, normally women are not mechuyav, they're not, they don't have to keep mitzvot aseh she'azman grama, right? Mitzvot that are time-bound. And these three holidays, Hanukkah, Purim, and Pesach, right? Women have to fulfill all those mitzvot. They have to hear Megillah. They have to drink 4 cups of wine or grape juice. And they also have to light Hanukkah candles, right? So the Gemara says, she'afhen ayu be'oto hanes. They were also in that miracle. So Rashi over there says it doesn't mean that they were included in the miracle, that they were also saved. Of course they were also, because they're part of the Jewish people. What the Gemara means to say, that the miracle came about because of the women. Okay? Basically, it means that any redemption that we've had so far, right, a clear redemption that we've had so far, came about because of women. Again, Hanukkah, Purim, and Pesach. The three redemptions that we've had from exile so far, she'afhen ayu be'oto hanes, the redemption came about because of the women. And so that's just, you should believe me, that it's also in future generations, not only back then in Egypt. Yeah, this is just happens to be where it's quoted. That just happens to be where it's quoted.
Anything to do with Ruth itself.
Well, it does. I didn't check how it's connected to Ruth specifically, but happens to be this is where, well, the first, so today, it's funny, today everyone quotes, "Bizchut nashim tzidkaniyot nigalu avoteinu mimitzrayim, uvizchutan atidin lehigael," right? And in their merit, so, like, I knew that by heart since I was in, I don't know, I can't even remember, but, you know, there's like one chazal that all Jewish girls know by heart, and that is it. When I went searching for where it says, there's no place where it says together. The first part is in the Gemara that I quoted to you before. The second part is in this. And just somehow, in later generations, it was just put together into one beautiful phrase. They're both right, and they're both quoted from somewhere, but it was really not
the
same.
Yeah,
in the merit of righteous women, our forefathers were redeemed from Egypt, and in the merit of righteous women, we are going to be redeemed in the future, too.
Well, that's why it's from
Ruth. Right, because, right, for the future, Melech HaMashiach, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
For Hanukkah, it was
Yehudit. It's Judith. Yeah. What she did was, she was the daughter of, you know, there were 5 Maccabees, so she was their sister. And one of the gezeret that we talk about less is that, besides for the Shabbos and Bris Milah and Chodesh and all that stuff, there was also a decree that any Jewish woman, before she got married, she had to go and have relationships with the hegemon, with the commander, the army commander of that area first, which basically what they were trying to do was to ruin the sanctity of the Jewish home, right? So Yehudit was getting married, and her brothers, the Maccabees, were like, no way is she going to do that. And she said, no, leave it up to me, don't worry. And she went into Halofenus, who was the army commander of that area, and she brought meat and cheese and whatever, and she gave him to eat, and he got very sleepy, because meat and cheese and wine together makes you very sleepy. And then she had hidden a sword, and she killed him, and she took the head out, and when they saw the head, so they all, you know, the army ran away, and that was basically the beginning of the end of the Greeks.
Is that from the Talmud? Like,
yeah, that's from the Gemara.
That's not from the Maccabees, right?
What do you mean? Is
that's
that from
not from the Book of the Maccabees?
You mean the I don't know if that story is mentioned in general history, but it's in the Gemara.
Okay.
Okay, it could be. I don't know. I didn't read any general history books about that.
Okay.
I don't know. Now, I have a lot of more quotes. Like, I have a lot more examples of women, you know, looking past, you know, living up to without giving into the moment. But time is short, so I just want to end off. So the question that I had after seeing all these sources, which you can continue reading them at home in your spare time as your bedtime story tonight, the question that I had, I was like, okay, this is all very nice. I understand that there's this, you know, there's this trait that women have. We can call them a lot of things. We could call it bitachon. They have trust in Hashem. We could call it positivity. We could call it hakarat hatov, which means to have gratitude. Like, they constantly have that gratitude to God that doesn't let them go away. And you know, we could call it a lot of things. But what's the underlying reason that women have the ability to attain these character traits, these attributes, right? So this is a little Kabbalistic, but I hope you'll forgive me. You know, you'll try to follow. So basically, the Shla, and it's there's a lot of other, the Maharal, Mefarshim speak about this, and basically what they say is that we know that there's a God to the world, right? Hashem is the God, but do we feel God? Do we see God in this world? Not fully. What we see in this world is called Hashra'at HaShchina. What we see in this world is called the Shechina, which is a manifestation of godliness in this world. Okay? So we know that God is something much greater and bigger than this world can handle, right? And the Shechina is the manifestation, basically God would be the potential, right? And the Shechina would be living that potential in this world. So when do we have Shechina? Well, every synagogue has Hashra'at HaShechina. The Beit HaMikdash had Hashra'at HaShechina. Every Jewish home has the potential of having Hashra'at HaShechina. When we have, you know, times of Hashgacha Pratit, of Divine Providence, right? There's many times in this world that we feel Hashra'at HaShechina. Okay, so in Kabbalistic terms, God himself is referred to as the male, and the Shechina, the manifestation of the godliness in this world, is referred to as the female. Okay? Now, why is that? Basically, because the way God created male and female, it's expressed in many ways. Okay? I'm not going to tell you, like... So, basically, God created the male as being the mashpia, being the source of things, right? Being what we would call... the structure, right, or the frame of things, and then the woman is the one who takes the potential from the male and gives it a form, gives it a shape, gives it a reality, brings it into reality. The most, the simplest example of this would be having a baby, right? The male, without the male, we can't have children, right? So the male has the power, bekoach, right, to have children, but who takes that power, that framework, and brings it into reality? The woman, right? So, women basically, that's in a physical way, right? On a spiritual level, women have this ability of seeing things not for their potential, but for their future, sorry, not for what they are now, but for their potential, right? So women are able to take something that looks very abstract, that looks very far removed, and say, no, it's not over yet, it's not done yet, we can still reuse it, we can still do something with it, right? And that's a power that women have. Now, I'm not going, you know, obviously it doesn't mean that, so in an old-fashioned way, maybe we would say, okay, fine, so the guy works and then the woman cooks, right? That's not what it means. It means that maybe some people are like that, some couples are like that, but not everyone's like that. It means that women have this power. They could be a CEO of a company, but they see the potential of the company, right? Women in general have this power to see above and beyond the moment. Okay. right? They have the potential to see above and beyond, to see the potential of something, to see the future of something. And this is basically what we see all along. All these sources that we have, what we see, again, we could call it many things. We could call it trust in God. We could call it positivity. We could call it a lot of different things. But the underlying source of what we see is that the women saw beyond what was going on at the time. At the time, people were ready to despair. At the time, it looked like the end. And again, it wasn't only in Egypt. With Hanukkah, it was the same. With Purim, it was the same. It took a woman to come and say, guys, it's not over yet. Don't give up so quickly, right? There's still so much hope. There's still so much to look forward to. There's still so much to build for. There's still so much to do. Don't give up yet. And again, don't forget, it's not only the merit of those righteous women, but the Medrash says very clearly that in every generation, there's going to be those righteous women who are going to say, you're right, the world is crazy. I mean, look around. I'm not denying that. The world is crazy today, but it's not over yet. There's still so much hope. The redemption is still to come. God still looks after his children, and it's not the end yet. And again, it's going to be in the merit of those righteous women in the future too. So may we all live up to be those righteous women, and we should all merit to see the final redemption very quickly, very soon in our time. Thank you.